Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutade Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachade Shatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastava Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, so this is kind of a summary of Canto 3, not covering all the topics there, but some of the major topics. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has classified Canto 3 as Sarga, a discussion of the primary creation, that is Mahavishnu glancing and manifesting Mahatattva and other elements from Prakriti. So that's one of the major topics of this canto. Of course, there's many other topics as well, but that's one of the major ones. And in chapter 5 through 12, we get many descriptions of this primary creation of the Lord. So primary creation is, as I said, one of the topics of the Bhagavatam. It's one of the 10 topics, and it's the first topic. From one point of view, the spiritual point of view, that's the ultimate spiritual world. Material world is not very important. It's like insignificant compared to the spiritual world. But from our point of view, in the material world, we always ask, well, how does the world created? How does the Lord create the world, etc.? So therefore, scriptures discuss the creation of this material world, and they do so in some detail. So here we have in this canto a description of the creation. So the important factor to remember here is that the cause is ultimately the Supreme Lord. It's a person who is the Supreme Lord. It's a form of Vishnu. Which is for us simple to accept, but many people have other confusions. They say Brahma's the creator, or Shiva's the creator, or nobody's the creator, or Brahman is the everything, and the whole world's illusion. So there's all sorts of theories about how the material world is created. So we accept the material world as real, and therefore there has to be an explanation of how it arises. What's the relationship between the world and the Supreme Lord? How does he do it? How does he manifest this creation of the material without becoming contaminated? As I said, there are other theories. One is that there is no creation at all. Matter does not exist, ultimately. So ultimately, it's all illusion. Where they were thinking there's something real, but it's not there. So ultimately, all that exists is Brahman. Not a person, just impersonal Brahman. And everything else doesn't exist. This is Mayavad philosophy. And so there is technically no creation. No need to discuss a sarga at all. It doesn't exist. It's illusory. And others, of course, will just go as far as the creation within the material world and say Brahma's the creator because he creates the bodies for the living entities within the universe. So we have many other, then some people saying Shiva is the creator, Durga is the creator. But in Bhagavatam, we find that Vishnu is the creator. This is, of course, not independent. We'll find in the Upanishads also. Vishnu is described as the creator. So we have one whole Upanishad dedicated to that. That's the Mahanarayan Upanishad. So that is explains how Narayan manifests all the universes, etc. So, therefore, it's not just Bhagavatam is saying this, but other scriptures as well. So in any case, we have here a description of the primary creation, and it's created by a form of Vishnu. Now, we previously had a description also in the fifth chapter of the second canto. And we also get a little bit of a description in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita in chapter 6 and 7 about the creative aspect of Vishnu. Yeah. As I said, it was one of the, it's the first topic here, Sarga, the creation. We notice that all these topics here are Related to the material world, sarga, visarga, sthana, poshana, uti, manvantara, ishanukata, then niroda. All to do with creation and destruction of the material world, and in between we get the maintenance, sthana, poshana, uti, manvantara, ishanukata. How the Lord operates within the material world after it's created, then we have niroda, destruction. Then we have liberation, and we have Krishna. So 10 topics are there. So the first topic is creation. Obviously, we can't discuss avatars or manus or anything without first discussing how the material world was created. So, in chapter, second canto, chapter 10, the sarga was described. Sarga refers to manifestation of the gross material elements. That's ether, air, fire, water, earth, the tanmatras, like sound, form, touch, fragrance, and taste, the senses, false ego, and mahatattva, caused when the Lord transforms the gunas. And then visarga is the creation of bodies for the jivas carried out by Brahma. So that's the secondary creation, visarga. Sthanam refers to the Lord's excellence in situating living beings within the universe. So in other words, it's the places that are created for the bodies of the jivas. Poshana means the Lord's mercy. How does the Lord show mercy within the universe? Manvantara refers to the conduct of the kings ruling the Manvantara periods. Uti refers to the impressions created by the jivas' actions which lead them to future births. Isha Kata refers to the descriptions of the Lord's avatars and their devotees, filled with various stories. Niroda refers to the merging of the jiva along with the material identity into the Lord at the time of final devastation of the universe. Mukti refers to jiva's attainment of his form as pure Atma after giving up the gross and subtle material bodies. Asraya, Bhagavan, from whom arise creation, subcreation, protection, mercy, karma, dharma of the kings, appearance of the avatars, destruction and liberation, is also called Paramatma and Brahman. So these are the general definitions of these 10 topics. And the Asraya is the cause of all of the other topics. So ultimately, if we talk about Mahavishnu as the sarga, the cause of, you know, glancing over material energy, etc., ultimately cause is Krishna. He is Swayam Bhagavan. So therefore we don't end with Vishnu and say, okay, Vishnu is the cause. The final cause is Krishna. So we have different, when we use the word cause, it's used differently, and to it means different things. So one cause is called the nimitta, or the we call the efficient cause. Sometimes that phrase is used in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavad, the efficient cause or nimitta. So this is the we can say that the higher cause. It's like the potter who makes the pot. So he is the cause of the pot. The potter is the cause. Upadan means a material cause. Clay is the material cause of a pot. So we have a material element, our material thing which causes the pot. And that's called the clay, the material cause, upadan. And then we have the object created, which is the pot. So these two terms, nimitta and upadan, are often used to indicate cause. In terms of the creation, we can say that Vishnu is the efficient cause, like the potter. He glances over material energy and then everything takes place and then material world is created. Upadan is the prakriti. This is the material cause. Without prakriti, we cannot get the material world. Prakriti is the basis, like the clay, and transforms into different material elements. So these are two causes. Of course, we do need the nimitta. We need Vishnu to glance and then matter can form into universes, etc. Okay. Though that is true, in our Sampradaya, the Gaudiya Sampradaya, we say that the Supreme Lord is both the Namitta, like Vishnu, and He's also the Upadan. He is the material elements. Okay? So the Lord is both. Yeah? And from that Lord manifests the universe as we know it. So the Lord is non-different from matter, Upadan, Prakriti, but He's also different from it. Yeah? So the Lord is both types of causes, according to Gaudiya philosophy. Other Vaishnava philosophies don't accept the Upadan part. They say, no, He can only be the Nimitta part, like Mahavishnu glancing over Prakriti, and He's not Prakriti. Yeah? But we also say the Lord is also Upadan. He is the material cause as well. Yeah? Because I mentioned previously, Shakti and Shaktiman were the same, non-different. Shaktiman is material Shakti, Maya Shakti. So it's non-different from the Lord. So in that sense, Lord and material energy is identical. So why we have to say both? Because that's what scriptures say. Shruti and Smriti both say the same thing. The Lord is Namitta, He's also Upadan, He's both things. This is also discussed in the Brahma Sutras. And the conclusion is the Lord is both. So here's a statement to show that the Lord is the Namitta, Tad Aikshata, the Lord glanced. The Lord glanced and created the universe. So He is like the potter making the pot. But then we have other statements in the scripture, Sarvam Kalavidam Brahma, Brahman is everything. Brahman is this whole universe. That means the Prakriti aspect. So the Lord is Prakriti also. So we have two types of statements. So therefore, how to correlate these two statements. So we say He's both. Mm. That's Gaudiya philosophy. The Lord is one with everything, He's also different from everything. But that's Achinchabedabed. So as I said, we have Mahavishnu, but actually Krishna is the final cause. Not that at one time only Krishna existed and then Mahavishnu was later created. They're all eternal, but Krishna is the full form, Mahavishnu is a functional aspect for the material world, and then Mahavishnu carries out His glance, so to speak, and Prakriti produces things. But when the Mahavishnu glance is simultaneous with Mahavishnu's glance, is it the jivas are injected by Mahavishnu into Prakriti? And this creates some agitation of Prakriti. Prakriti before this does not manifest any quality, no guna. The gunas are there, but they don't manifest at all. When the jivas are injected into Prakriti by Mahavishnu at a certain time, then sattva-gun manifests. So the jivas plus Prakriti produce a sattva-gun state of Prakriti. Prakriti, we have some very subtle aspects which are not actually material mass. That is time, karma, daiva, svabhava. These are some very subtle factors. Kala is time, karma is of course the action, daiva means karma as we know it, the future lifetimes you get effects for sinful activities or punyas, etc. And svabhava is the ability of the karma to stick to the jiva. These elements are also inherent within the material world, and they go along with Prakriti and operate within this material world. So the subtle aspects are called Jiva Maya, Kala, Karma, Daiva, Svabhava, and the more gross aspects are called Guna Maya, that's Prakriti. Okay, so Kala is time, Karma means action, the Daiva the effects of action, and svabhava, the ability of the karma to stick to the jivas. So these are also inbuilt within the material world. So the first aspect is called sattva. When Mahavishnu glances and injects a jiva, Prakriti manifests in a sattvic state. That's called mahatattva. Once that first sattvic state is created, then it starts to transform again. and it transforms into a rajasic state of prakriti with the jiva in it. This is called sutra. This again transforms into a tamasic state called ahankara. Yeah? So in this way we get prakriti transforming into different gunas as we go on until we get ahankara manifested. And then the ahankara manifests into three types: jnana shakti in sattva, kriya shakti in rajas, and dravya shakti in tamas. So the we get vaikaraka ahankara, tajasa ahankara, and tamasa ahankara. And then we get, out of this we get the mind and the devatas from the sattvic portion. From the rajasic portion we get the intelligence and the knowledge senses. And then we get the tanmatras, and then the or sense objects, and we get the gross elements coming out. Yeah? So that's called the adibhuta aspect, the bhutas or the elements. Ajayakma means the more subtle aspect of the subtle body. Adidava means the devatas. So out of the different types of ahankara, we get these different elements of the material world. So these are the corresponding devatas for the different knowledge-gathering senses. And the corresponding tanmatra, corresponding element. All very systematic. Then we get prana coming out of rajasic ahankara. And it produces the karmendriyas, the action senses. And along with that we also get the, from sattvic ahankara, we get the devatas for the action senses. So Agni for the voice, for instance, Indra for the hands, Upendra for the feet. This Upendra is not actually the same as the Vishnu form. It's a minor deity, not the real Vishnu. Yeah, so this is another way of looking at a Mahavishnu. We get the subtle aspects, Kala, Sabhava, Daiva, Karma, etc. With Prakriti, and then Prakriti transforms into Mahatattva, Sutra, Ahankara, and then we get all of these things coming out. So, this is actually repeated many times in the Bhagavatam. This whole, sometimes not completely, only parts of it here, parts of it there, whatever, and then sometimes we get more complete versions. So the whole, let's say, 5 through 12 of the third canto is discussing this in different parts. So in chapter 6 we have, first the elements are created, then the elements form into little universes. Here we see a little universe besides Mahavishnu. Not one, there's many. But we just take one. So first there's Prakriti, and then Prakriti forms into elements. The elements form into these little balls. So these are all the different universes. And actually the universes are, they look big here, but actually they're so small they can fit into Mahavishnu's pores in his skin. Many of them. The example is given of here, like the holes here in the lattices, and then the air comes through it. So we have the pores of Mahavishnu, and like the air particles, air molecules are coming through these holes here. So through the pores of Mahavishnu, the universes can flow in and out. They're so small compared to the holes in the skin of Mahavishnu. So many, many universes in one hair hole of Mahavishnu. Actually, they're very small. Here they're a little bigger just to see them. And innumerable universes. Huh? So these are all made out of those material elements. The subtle elements and the gross elements. Yeah. This is just some sort of diagram of the universe. So we get a shell with all the material elements in the shell also, and then we get the inner part with the Garbhaduk ocean at the bottom, and Ananta Shesha there holding up the Bhumandala in the middle, and then we get the upper planetary systems above it. Okay, so in relation to this, we have again a description of the Vishwarupa, which was described several times in the second canto, so we get another description in the third canto, again, several descriptions of the Vishwarupa again. So as I said in chapter 1, 6, and 10 of the second canto, it was described as bhakti mistra yoga, like that. So we already did that. So again, we get another description here in the third canto. What is the purpose? One is illustrates the structure of the universe from the lowest planetary system to the upper planetary systems, and they're all like parts of a body related to each other. It also shows, when we have the universal form, that the universal form, the universe cannot function without the Lord, just as the body cannot function without the jiva inside it. So unless the Lord enters that universal form, it can't function. It cannot see, it cannot speak, it cannot do anything. So the Lord is necessary for the material world to operate. Of course, the universal form is another way of saying the Lord is non-different from matter. As I said before, he is the upadana, or the material cause as well. And it also shows that the perception of the jiva is ultimately dependent on the Lord. So we have descriptions of how this universal form cannot do anything. The senses don't operate until the Lord enters into it. So even for the individual living being, without the Lord here, as Paramatma, our senses aren't going to function. So we had this diagram before, the planetary systems located on the body of the Lord. That's the Vishwarupa. And then we had the sense and the sense organ and the sense object related to each other, like that. So the senses are atomic. This is mentioned in the Brahma Sutras. What size are the senses? They're very small, so subtle you cannot even see them actually, the real senses. What we have here, the eye and the ear, are the gross reflections of those senses, which are in the subtle body. And of course, they're not made out of gross elements. We saw this whole description where the gross elements were on tamoguna hankara, and from rajaguna hankara arose the senses. So they're different. They're elements also, different from the gross elements. These senses we have are made out of gross elements. Those subtle senses are elements in themselves. So they're quite different. And when the Atma leaves the body with the subtle body, those senses go with the subtle body, and we're left with these gross senses, which are dead. So these are they're actually elements. Those senses are elements. They're not made out of earth, water, air, fire, ether. They're quite different. We also have, we had the deities here attached to the Dikdevatas and all for the different senses. So also for the more subtle things like intelligence, mind, ahankara, and chitta, which are, we say, in the subtle body. We have also Brahma for the intelligence, the moon for the mind, Shiva for ahankara, and Vishnu for chitta, consciousness. So, as I mentioned, we also have a relationship between the deity, the I, and the form. They have to operate together for our senses to function. We need the sense, but we also need the sense object, but we also need the devata. If the devata doesn't cooperate, you cannot see properly. So all three are necessary to get perception in the jiva, or jiva's body. So, in our present condition, we have our subtle senses attached to the subtle body, and then we have the gross body with the gross senses, and the two have to operate together. But then again, if you're in a dream state, or you have an out-of-the-body experience, or astral travel or something, then the subtle senses are operating when your gross body is not operating. Even your brain is dead. In a near-death experience, you can perceive things. How? Because the subtle sense is still working. So all of that, the sense devata is necessary, but the atma is also necessary. If we don't have an atma, it doesn't work. All of this is material. The subtle senses are material. all of these things are material, but the Atma is also necessary. Not only the Atma is necessary, the Paramatma is necessary. So without all of this, it cannot function. Chapter 7 deals with the Lord. Why is the Lord uncontaminated? Why is the jiva contaminated by matter? That's the question. So the Lord is in the material world, but he's not contaminated. Why the jivas get contaminated? Because the jiva is different. The jiva is not the Lord. The jiva is weaker. So it can affect the maya, can affect the jivas. In this chapter also we have a description of the lineage of the Bhagavatam. Now we're of course familiar with Narada Muni, Veda Vyas, Sukadeva, that type of lineage. But there's another lineage mentioned here. Sankarshan, it's a Vishnu form. Sanat Kumar, one of the Kumaras. A sage called Sankhyayana. And then Parasara Muni, another sage. Father of Veda Vyas. And then Maitreya. So that's another lineage for the Bhagavatam. So in chapter 8 and 9, we get a description of Visarga. Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is there. Brahma appears from the lotus. And then he prays to get powers to create the material world. So that's chapter 8 and 9. So that's the Visarga. So the Lord begins to speak in this chapter 9 here, we see. And here he talks about being nimitta and upadan, as I mentioned previously. If a person sees me situated in all beings just as fire is situated in wood, he gives up his illusion. When a person sees that he, the jiva, is completely free from the reservoir of the gunas in the form of the body and senses and attain a relationship with me, he attains dasya rasa. So this indicates the process, abhideya, bhakti. And all the other methods culminate in bhakti. The result that men attain by pious acts, austerity, sacrifices, charities, and concentration in yoga should be pleasing to me. This is the opinion of the knower of the truth. So everything ultimately leads to Supreme Lord and Bhakti Yoga. And what is the goal? Prema. O Brahma, I am the soul in all the living beings. Among all dear things, I am the dearest object to the living beings. For this reason, the body and family are dear to a person. Therefore, one should have love for me. So in this talk between the Supreme Lord and Brahma, we get Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojan presented very nicely. Chapter 10 to 12 gives more details of this secondary creation of Brahma, where we get all sorts of living entities, including the human beings. Chapter 10 discusses sequence of the evolution of Prakriti, Mahatattva, Ahankar, sense objects, elements, 10 senses, devatas, sense devatas, mind, ignorance, etc. And then you get, this of course, Mahavishnu's creation, that's the Sarga. Then we get the Visarga, Brahma's creation, plants, animals, humans, devatas, and the Kumaras. And they're manifested by the Lord and Brahma together, so they're in a special category. So this is Brahma's creation, the sub-creation, or the Visarga. There's also a discussion of time measurements, which is just mentioned here. A very, very small fractions of time. The ones we're normally used to are anadika, and two nadikas equal one muhurta. So these are famous. A muhurta is 48 minutes. One anadi or nadika is 24 minutes. And then here we get the smaller divisions of time, down to portions of seconds and things like that, small portions of seconds. But the other thing is we get bigger and bigger. So we get days, 30 muhurtas is a day, 30 days is a month, 12 months is a year. 4,320,000 years is one whole yuga cycle of four yugas, Satya Treta Dwarpa Kali. And 1,000 of those is one day of Brahma. And then night is the same, 1,000 yuga cycles again. And then Brahma has months, years, up to 100 years. So we have some very huge calculations of time in the Bhagavatam, which are quite striking, and even for modern Western scientists, they're quite surprised by the huge numbers that they have in the Vedas. So something unique. Within the porthole of Mahavishnu, the universe composed of 16 transformations and 8 elements, measuring 500 million yojanas, covered by 7 layers of elements which are 10 times thicker than the previous layer, appears like a paramanu, a little particle. Millions of other universes also within the Lord's appear small as well. So we got these, what we think are very huge. Actually, the universe is small compared to the layers, because there's 7 layers, each 10 times bigger than the next. So the shell of the universe is huge compared to the little center, which is 500 million yojanas. So you get this huge shell. But it's like a little speck in relation to Mahavishnu. So here we have a discussion, our description of the production of ignorance by Brahma. There's different types of ignorance. One is called tamas, and we have moha, mahamoha, tamisra, and undatamisra. 5 varieties of ignorance. So the first one is jiva's ignorance of his sarup. He doesn't know he is an atma anymore. Then he identifies with his material body, second stage, moha. Then he gets attached to objects of enjoyment, mahamoha. Then he gets angry when he can't get his sense gratification, that's tamisra. And then under tamisra, he gets completely bewildered by the anger, and then he dies. So these are the stages of ignorance in Brahma's creation. Ignorance is whole avidya is also analyzed into 2 types: avarana, which means a covering. Yeah? So that's one type, and then we have vikshep, which is called, we can say, agitation or something like that. And then it's divided into moha, mahamoha, tamisra, and undatamisra, which were mentioned here before. But they can be considered, moha can be considered the asmita, which is identification with body, like ahankara. Mahamoha, attachment, tamisra, hatred, and undatamisra, abhinivesh, which are terms used in yoga philosophy, but similar. Though the Lord creates all this ignorance, he also is very balanced, so he also creates knowledge. So he creates the Kumars, manifests the Kumars. Of course, their Saktivesh avatars are eternal, but they manifest through Brahma. And their special Shakti as Shaktivesh avatars is Jnana, knowledge. So that's their Shakti. So they teach Sankhya, Yoga, Vairagya, and Tapas, and some bhakti as a secondary element. Brahma also creates Shiva or Rudra. And then Rudra takes up residence in the heart, senses, life, air, ether, air, fire, water, earth, sun, moon, and austerity. So So these are the 11 forms of Rudra. So we get Karma Yoga arising also at the very beginning of the creation of Brahma. So Brahma creates nine sons who are active in Karma Yoga: Marichi, Atri, Angira, Pulastya, Pulaha, Kratu, Bhrigu, Vasishta, and Daksha. These are all doing Karma Yoga type things. And Bhakti Yoga, Narada Muni, also comes out of this first creation, and he's the Shaktivesh avatar for Bhakti. His special Shakti is Bhakti. He's the tenth son. So, in other words, when Brahma has his creation, he's creating living beings, he has Bhakti Yoga, Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga. I mean, ignorance, of course, is there, but then he has all these yogas also, personalities who teach these different yoga systems at the beginning of his life, and the beginning of each day also. So, the Lord also creates Dharma, Adharma, lust, anger, greed, speech, death. Kardama Muni is created. The four Vedas manifest from his mouths. Upavedas manifest. The fifth Veda, which means Puranas and Itihasas. Socha, Daya, Tapa, Satya manifest. Socha means brahmachari life. Daya means grihastas. They should give charity. Tapas means vanaprastas, austerities. Satya, truth, highest truth. Meditation as sannyasis. The meters of poetry called chandas and the syllables of the alphabet also arise from Brahma. And then he produces Swayambhuva Manu and Satarupa, his wife. And then they create progeny, and we get Priyavrata and Uttanabad. And then they have three daughters, Akuti, Devahuti, Prasuti. Akuti marries Ruchi, Devahuti marries Kardama Muni, and Prasuti marries Daksha. Okay, let's go on to the other part now. Here we go. Okay, so we discussed this already. Then, chapter 13 to 19, the story of Varaha, which we won't go into detail. 20 to 33 is all about Kapila and his teachings. So 20 to 24, the whole story of Devahuti and Kardama Muni. Then in chapter 25, a very important chapter, all about Bhakti Yoga. Chapter 6, all about Jnana. Chapter 27, all about liberation, that's Jnana Yoga. 28, Astanga Yoga. And then 29, Bhakti in the Gunas and Pure Bhakti, which is a very important chapter also. So all of these subjects are presented here within the third canto. So something like Bhagavad Gita, but more expanded. So we have here all these different yogas, including Astanga Bhakti, etc. And if you don't do Karma Yoga, what happens? You end up in the gunas. So chapter 30 is all about Tamagun, 31 Tamas and Rajas, and 32 Rajas and Sattva. And then 33 is the description of Devahuti's Bhakti. So we got all sorts of varieties of actions within the material world described in the third canto. Tamagun. This is the lowest mode of material nature where the senses are uncontrolled and we get lust, anger, greed, and violence, etc., which leads to all sorts of problems because you get go to hellish planets and whatever, and get the tortures of Yamaraj. So the hellish punishments are described here. I won't go into detail about these, but we get lots of things happening to you in different hellish planets, which It's not only in the Bhagavatam, all the Puranas do it, but we also get the same things in Buddhism as well. The many, many descriptions in the Buddhist literature is also the hellish punishments. And, of course, even in Christian literature, we have the hellish punishments as well. The Greeks also have some sort of hell with punishment. So it's not unique to the Vedic literature, but in other religions of the world, they have similar types of stories. So, if you're very sinful and tamagunish, then you go down to get your hellish punishment. Then you get born as an animal, and eventually you make it up to the human species again after many, many lifetimes. And then you're subject to the law of karma again once you become a human being. And if you do the wrong activities, then you sink down again. So, after describing the hellish state, then eventually get up to the human state. So, chapter 31 describes getting birth as a human being, and it describes how the embryo is in the womb and is suffering, and then starts to pray in the seventh month because of the miserable condition in the womb. Yeah? However, it's described that this is actually not that every child does this. Most children are too much in ignorance, so they're not going to pray to Vishnu in the womb. So it's only a very special child that's actually going to pray to Vishnu. Eh? Very special jiva, like a rishi. So, and then the Lord gives him good instructions. So it's not that every jiva gets the instructions when he's in the womb. It's only very special jivas. So, once the child comes out, if he gets bad association, especially with women, then he goes to hell again, and he gets punished again. He gets to go to the thing. Then he gets gradually works his way up, and becomes a human being again. And then, if he's unfortunate with bad association, he does the same thing, and he goes down again. So this is lower cycle. So chapter 32 discusses a better option. You take to Vedic rules and regulations, Sakama Karma Yoga. You do Karma Yoga, but with desires for enjoyment. So this is a Rajagun type of existence. We want to enjoy in the material world, do it, but do it with some limitation. So it's better than no thing, and eventually get into Tamagun, and then you sink down and revolve through various animal species. So better to do Sakama Karma Yoga. That's Rajagun. And then you worship devatas, you go to heavenly planets in return, and not much interested in worshiping the Lord or going for liberation. Chapter 32. So, if you are a little more advanced, you get to Nishkama Karma Yoga, and this is in Sattvagun. So you do the activities of Karma Yoga without attachment and without desire to get material enjoyment. You just do it as a duty. Okay? So this is sattva-gunish. Okay? So by doing this, you can get to Brahmaloka, and you can even get up to liberation if you do the proper activities. Okay? So once you get to Brahmaloka due to doing Nishkama Karma Yoga, you can return to the material world again if you don't do bhakti. If you do bhakti, you can get sayuja or Vaikuntha, which means liberation, or you can even get Vaikuntha depending on the amount of bhakti that you do in Brahmaloka. You don't do the bhakti, you go down. If you do bhakti when you're in Brahmaloka, then you get advancement. You can merge in Brahman if you so desire. Or if you do more bhakti, you can go to Vaikuntha. And if you want to get good results, you have to do bhakti for any process, even attaining svarga, what to speak of liberation in Vaikuntha. And if you do less bhakti, you get less results. Okay. So in any case, we should go to a higher level and understand that Krishna is the Prayojana, that he is Bhagavan Swayam. And we had this verse previously, that everything depends on Vishnu. Like that. So, Vedas, Yajnas, Varnas, Ashramas, Jnana, Yoga, austerity or tapas, bhakti and prema are all dependent on Supreme Lord Krishna. Yeah. So this is just a diagram to show the relative positions of the different Vedic systems in the gunas. Yeah. So at the bottom we have Sakama Karma Yoga. Of course, at the bottom we're going to have no yoga at all. That's the real tamoguna aspect. And you just go down to hell. If you start practicing in, as a sudra, with you get Sakama Karma Yoga, and then you get up to Rajagun, also with that. And you can maybe become a Vaishya, a Kshatriya. And then you can start getting Nishkama Karma Yoga as a Kshatriya and a Brahmana. And then you can get fixed in Sattvaguna as a Brahmana, Nishkama Karma Yoga. From that you can advance to Jnana Yoga and Astanga Yoga in Sattva Guna. Yeah? So all of these are in the gunas. Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Astanga Yoga. Tamagun, Rajagun, Sattva Guna. Bhakti Yoga is superior. It's beyond the gunas. It comes from Krishna. It doesn't originate in the gunas. It's got nothing to do with the gunas. So bhakti is a special process, it's independent of the other processes. And without that bhakti, you also don't get good results for these other processes. Okay. Karma yoga without a little bhakti will give material enjoyment. Will not give material enjoyment. Jnana yoga without a little bhakti will not give liberation. Astanga yoga without a little bhakti won't give liberation or siddhis. So everything needs a little bit of bhakti. So you do put a little bit of bhakti in your karma yoga, you can go to Svargaloka or Brahmaloka. Without it, yeah, you don't get any result. If you do Jnana yoga and little bhakti, you get liberation. If you have Jnana yoga and no bhakti, no liberation. So those jnanis who offend the Lord by saying the Lord has no form and whatever, no liberation. Yeah. So, karma yoga keeps you in the material world. You can get Svargaloka, Brahmaloka by doing some bhakti. If you do Jnana yoga with some bhakti, you can get up Suyuja. If you do bhakti, you can get spiritual world and rasa. So they all give different results, but they all need bhakti in them, the other processes. Yeah. Now if we do bhakti, we can have a little bit of contamination of karma, a little desire for enjoyment. That will give better than karma yoga or jnana yoga, because it's bhakti, and mostly bhakti. So you can get sarupya, salokya, and sarsti. You can get a form, a spiritual form in Vaikuntha. You can get same Vaikuntha plana, and you can get some powers also in Vaikuntha by karma mister bhakti. If you do Gyan Misra Bhakti, bhakti with a little mixture of jnana in it and desire for a little desire for liberation, you end up with Shantarasa. If you do pure bhakti, then you get prema. And you can have Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. So that's why we emphasize pure bhakti as the process. Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. So that arises from pure bhakti. This is the teaching of Kapila. My dear mother, I therefore advise that you take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for his lotus feet are worth worshipping. Accept this with all devotion and love, for thus you can be situated in transcendental devotional service. So this is pure bhakti. So here also is an interesting analogy given. Just as one object, the substrate of many qualities, is perceived by the various senses in various ways, so Bhagavan is perceived variously by various scriptural practices. So we have an object with here, and it has various qualities. Each sense can perceive it a little bit. So by our eye, we can see the shape and the color. We can't understand the sound with our eye. We can't understand the texture of it either with the eye. So the texture and the temperature of it, we get with the touch only. Sound, then that we get through the ear. So the various senses will give us some idea of an object, the qualities of an object. Similarly, by doing various spiritual practices, we can perceive the Lord differently, like the different senses give us different ideas of an object. So if we use the eye, milk looks white. By the tongue, milk is sweet. By touch, it is cool. By the nose, it is fragrant. By the ear, we hear the word milk. So each gives us a true quality, but it's also limited. And one sense cannot perceive the qualities that another sense perceives. So, we take the mind, which is the king of senses. It puts all of the sense perceptions together. Then we get a complete knowledge of the milk. The color, the taste, the temperature, etc. Fragrance, all of that. Through the mind, everything comes together. So, like that. You can take milk and analyze it with different senses, but it's not complete. Put it all together with the mind, then we have a complete understanding of milk. So, if you do karma yoga, then you perceive the Lord in one way. What? You can perceive the opulences of the material world. If you do jnana yoga, you perceive one object, the aspect of the Lord, Atma or Brahman. If you do bhakti, then you perceive Bhagavan. So in this way, or if you do yoga, you see Paramatma. So by different processes, we can perceive the Lord differently. But the process of bhakti is like the mind. With that, we get all perceptions included. So through bhakti, we can understand about Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So we get all perceptions of the Lord within bhakti. And of course, we can realize all different forms like that. In chapter 33, Devahuti glorifies Kapila as an avatar. You become dependent on my body as a baby, just as you appear in this world in forms like the boar, or destroy sin, or to destroy sin, or to make those who follow your instructions prosperous. You appear to teach the path of jnana and bhakti directed towards yourself. So the purpose of Kapila as avatar is to teach. And she also makes a very nice statement here. Bhakti removes prarabdha karma. So this is a very important statement, because other processes will not remove prarabdha karma. Prarabdha karma is the karma of this lifetime that we're going to have to suffer. So jnana does not claim to remove that karma. Whatever you've got in this lifetime, and jnana is not going to remove your birth or anything, your body, or anything that happens to your body in this lifetime. Same with yoga. Bhakti says it will remove it. By hearing or chanting your name, by offering respects to you, by occasional remembrance of you, even the dog eater immediately becomes qualified for performing the soma sacrifice. Oh Lord, what then to speak of the person who sees you? So simply chanting the name of the Lord removes the dog eater aspect of a person, which is his karma of this lifetime. And it's gone. So therefore he can perform the soma sacrifice. So that's an example of prarabdha karma getting removed. So this is quoted in Nectar Devotion, and this is also one of the verses used by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to say that initiation, when we get our Vaishnava initiation, because we're chanting, therefore we're qualified to do what the Brahmana can do. So therefore he gives the Brahma Gayatri and the thread, etc., because of that. So he uses this verse. How astonishing, the outcast on the tip of whose tongue your name appears becomes guru. All those who chant your name, becoming most respectable, have completed all austerities, all sacrifices, all bathing, and all study of the Vedas. So it's the glorification of chanting the name of the Lord. It's just simply the name of the Lord. So, chanting the name in bhakti gives much more than simply becoming qualified for sacrifice. That is merely to show that your karmas are destroyed. Huh? So, it gives actually much more than that. And the name can just appear on the tip of the tongue, it says in the previous verse. So what that means is you don't even have to pronounce it fully. Huh? And you can chant it once, not many times, and still it has such great effect. And an outcast can chant incompletely one time the name, and he says he's the best guru. He becomes qualified to teach the mantra with the name within it to others. In other words, he can become a Diksha Guru. Yeah? So the name is very, very powerful. So these people have already done all sacrifices, as was stated in that verse. What to speak of one such person, others also who chant your name have performed all sacrifices and austerities and sacrifices. So it's not just an odd example, actually it happens to many people. They bathe in all holy places. They and others are worthy of respect. Having completed all actions, they just chant the holy name. Okay. So in this chapter also, this is the end of this canto, Kapila departs and Devahuti attains the Supreme Lord. By the method taught by Kapila, she quickly attained the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, the Supreme Soul. This attainment included liberation. Yeah. So, actually, this is Kapila at Ganga Sagar. There's a famous festival that's held, I think, in January every year at Ganga Sagar. The devotees go there also because there's a huge number of people go there to bathe at that time. So devotees go there and distribute prasadam at this place, Ganga Sagar. Okay, that's the end of this chapter. Or canto, actually.
Here, the glories of bhakti and hell have the tears in hell. You know, at least in regards to chanting, like you mentioned, the chandalas, incomplete chanting on the tongue qualifies the person so much. But how is it that if we're fully engaged in bhakti, we can still be influenced by the modes?
Oh, well, there's one explanation is that your karmas can go. Yeah? So the karmas are like the, let's say, the your birth, your chandala nature, etc., like that, but which are from your birth. But other things, the desires and the hankara don't go immediately. Okay. So that can cause obstructions for you still. And even if your karmas are gone, it may not be apparent to you that your karmas are all gone, because we don't know which are our karmas, except the one for the body, but we don't know the other karmas that are coming up in the future, whatever, we don't know that. So we may not be aware of it, that all the karmas are gone. Ajamil was not aware that all of his karmas were gone. And he didn't look like he had changed either up until his death point, because he's still doing sinful activities, but he had no karmas. So that's very difficult for us to perceive the destruction of karmas. The other things take longer to destroy. The vasanas or the desires, and all the, we call the papbija, the seed of sin, and then the ahankara, more difficult. Usually ahankara gets destroyed in bhava stage.
So, when Prabhupada mentions that, sometimes old habits come back again, that's the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the desires and the ahankara still influencing us.
Powerful to counteract even that give us personal desire to for things gratification?
Yeah. Every jiva can affect another jiva, and if you pray for another jiva, it's also beneficial for another jiva. It is said that you can perform ekadasi for another person, even fast for another person, he can get the benefit of your ekadasi, so like that. So, and we see shraddha rites, which are not even devotional rites, but you act for somebody else by worshipping the pitras, and then the person who is supposed to go to hell gets some relief from your activities. So that's there, even in karma yoga or whatever, you can transfer some of your effect to the others. So what to speak of bhakti? Yes, by doing devotional activities, we can also give the results to some other person as well, and they get the benefit of it. But it's also possible. Therefore, prayer is, you know, an effective means of helping another person. So what, we start praying for them if they're moving away? Yeah, I can help, yeah, definitely. Yeah. It comes to 360 instead of 365, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. How does the Vedic calendar compensate that sort of discrepancy?
Yeah, in astrology also they seem to calculate using 360 often, which 365, I don't know how they make the extra things, but there's some method by which they do it, I don't know exactly. But this is, let's say, the theoretical calculation. Actual, they probably, you know, add the extra days, but theoretically we somehow use this system of 360.
If you remember last year we celebrated that there's supposed to be an extra month.
Oh, well that's a different, that's another thing, that's a lunar.
Right. Ah,
so lunar year is shorter than the solar year. That's a real peculiar thing, but it's shorter. So if you don't add an extra month every 2-point-something years, it gets, everything gets earlier and earlier and earlier and earlier, which is what happens in the Muslim calendar. They don't have that extra month, and so therefore the festival, like what is it, Hari Raya, it goes all the way around the whole winter, summer, spring, everything like that, and it keeps revolving like that. So to fix that up, we add the extra month into our lunar calendar, and so then the days go back again with an extra month, and they go back to their, and then over 2.5 years they start slipping and getting earlier and earlier and earlier, then we stick the extra month in again, it goes back again.
Like this.
Approximately. So that's the lunar month. It's shorter than the solar month, and that's why we have to keep adding in. Yeah.
And I was wondering if Brahma is experiencing his day and night similarly to how we experience.
Kind of, yeah. He's, of course, we can't really imagine it because his consciousness is much superior to ours and whatever, but definitely his idea of time is much different from ours also. So it's not like, you know, I'm going through millions of years, when is this day going to get over? You know? It's something like our days, and we have 24 hours, and you know, we do things in this day, so he has his day like that.
Okay.
That's all. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, Hare Krishna.